The Walking Dead Girl Podcast, episode 27. Hello, everybody. My name is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
And I'm the Walking Dead Girl. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the TV episodes right after they air, we sometimes have interviews with special guests.
If you want to give us feedback on the show, you can send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com, or you can leave a comment on our website, thewalkingdeadgirl.com. We routinely read feedback and comments on the show.
Currently, we're reviewing Season 3, Episode 7, and it's called When the Dead Come Knocking. Before we get started, I want to let all of you know that we will be discussing every gory detail about the TV show, so obviously there will be spoilers. Don't say we didn't warn you.
And we want to give a follow-up on something we've been talking about in the past, and that's Walker Stalker Con.
Yes, we originally heard it from Jason on his podcast, and you specifically came to my room yesterday and said, you know, this Walker Stalker Con, everybody's going to be there. I'm thinking maybe we should go. It's like the ultimate Walking Dead convention.
Well, the thing is, we don't know if there's going to be another one because they have no plans for making another one.
They don't?
Not according to the website. So I'm just...
Because I know that VidCon, even before they sold tickets, they said they were going to have another one in 2014.
Yeah. So they're not... This is the first one.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. So they're not sure about the turnout. I'm thinking, you know...
The first one's probably going to be the best.
You think so?
Because it's the smallest group. So that means there'd be more, you know, VIP access, but not really because everybody will be a VIP.
Yeah. Well, they have VIP tickets.
It'll be more intimate.
Yeah. You can get VIP tickets so you can go like to the front of the line on certain...
Oh my God, we should get that.
On certain things. So, I think we should investigate that and see what, if we can fit it into our budget and see what we can do, because that would be awesome.
That'd be so, I wouldn't even mind going on some like rinky dink airplane to fly to Georgia to go.
No, you're not going to go on a rinky dink plane. It's going to be a pretty big plane because it's far from where we are here. So a lot of the actors are going to be there.
Like Chandler Riggs.
Mm-hmm. Norman Reedus.
Laurie Holden. Who else?
Glenn and Maggie, I forget their real names. Sorry. And, you know, we'll get to meet a lot of these people potentially.
Well, I don't know if we'll meet them, but we'll be able to see them at panels. But maybe like VidCon where I got to meet everybody personal. Well,
they have meet and greets, like sign.
Oh, yeah, meet and greets. But they probably won't be walking around the hall or anything.
No, no. They're going to have designated times where you can go up and get signed autographs and photos. Mm-hmm. And you have to pay extra for the photos. They actually charge for the photos.
Really?
Yeah, because they're famous actors.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I don't have... All I have is experiences with, like, teen conventions where everybody's so nice to each other and free photos for everyone.
Yeah, so you can't get free photos, but I think it's worth it. I mean, if your favorite actor's there from the show and you want to take a photo...
Okay, if Andrew Lincoln was there, then I would pay any kind of money to go see him.
Really? He's your favorite? So if you were to... If you say, okay, you have to pay, but you can only... get one photo with a certain actor, and Andrew Lincoln's not there. Okay.
Oh. No photo.
Who would that be?
Out of everybody who's there?
Yeah.
Or who's going to be there, or just the cast besides Andrew Lincoln?
I think everyone's going to be there, but let's assume everyone's there except Andrew Lincoln.
Oh my God. I would probably get a photo with. That's hard. That's hard. You can't.
Well, I would get it with Daryl, Norman Reedus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would either get it with Daryl because he seems like a cool person in real person. Mm-hmm. And maybe Michonne.
Oh, yeah. Michonne would be awesome. She's going to be there, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then I would say Chandler Riggs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. What does that look?
Oh, really?
What does that look? Because he's a kid and he's badass. Come on. He kills zombies for fun.
So you don't have the hots for him?
No, Dad. He's like 12.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Well,
is he 12?
Is he 12 anymore? I think he's like 14 now. I mean, if that was like 2 years ago.
So I just looked it up now and he's 14.
That's the same age as my brother. So technically it'd be like liking my brother.
No, well, except that your brother's not starring in a hit TV series from AMC. Okay, yeah. So we'll look at that, and it looks like we might be going, but no guarantees. So if anyone else is going and
hit us up, man,
listening to this podcast, please.
Oh my gosh, if we go, Dad, I'll love you forever.
And now you hate me, right?
Yeah. No, I still love you because you went with me to VidCon. So
okay, I thought you just loved me because I'm your dad, but you know.
No, you gotta earn that love, man.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. God, I'm going bankrupt with you here. And the other thing we want to announce is, well, not announcement. We just want to thank Mr. Blog and his daughter Maggie for mentioning us on the Walking Dead cast podcast.
Yep, a big thank you for that,
which came out yesterday. So thank you very much for that. And we had I think you guys did an awesome job. And
yeah,
let's hear it for father daughter teams.
You.
Okay, you're being kind of
what, ghetto?
Yes.
What?
In this episode. I don't know what's going on with you.
Sorry, but I came back from school and I'm under the influence of other kids my own age.
Okay.
So what, do you want me to cut it out?
No, do whatever you want. I'm fine.
You can't stop this thug life, Dad.
Oh, no.
I can't believe I actually said that. Oh, my God. Okay, let's get into this episode.
In this episode that we're reviewing today, which we just watched, it's called When the Dead Come Knocking.
Yes.
And Season 3, Episode 7.
307. And we open up with a showdown, an interrogation scene with Glenn and Merle. Because in the previous episode, Merle took both Maggie and Glenn back to Woodbury to kind of figure out where their camp is, mm-hmm. You know? And we're going to play a little clip of that. So, yeah, roll the clip.
You don't even know why you're here, do you? I didn't mean you no harm. I lowered my gun, but you raised yours. You an asshole out there. Just like you were on that rooftop back there in Atlanta. What y'all did? Leaving me up there. People wouldn't do that to an animal.
We went back for you.
Ain't you thoughtful?
We did. All of us. Rick, Daryl, T-Dog.
T-Dog. Yeah, big old spear chucker. The one I was pleading with. The one that dropped the key. Tell me where it's at. I'm sure T-Dog would like to bury the hatchet. Let bygones be bygones.
He didn't make it.
Well, I hope he went slow. Yeah. How about the rest? How about my baby brother? You can't tell me he's alive and then hold off on where he is. No? Well, maybe the farmer's daughter will help me out. Tell me something. When she's scared and she's holding you close and her trembling skin is close to you, her soft lips are touching you here, all over here, and over here. Feels good, don't it? I remember you. Yeah, you're the sneaky one. The one with nerve. You don't scare easy, do you? I like that. Now, I want to know where my brother is. I want to know where the sheriff is. No! Yeah! Now I want to know where you're hiding, where your camp is, and I want to know now. I want to know now! Where the hell are they? Tell me!
Well.
Did you like the special effects with the squishing sound and everything?
No, I did not. That was not very pleasant. Yeah, so that's the first scene, and basically we see Merle interrogating Glenn, unfortunately, with Maggie listening in the background, which sucks.
She was in the other room.
Yeah.
And she was hearing everything that Merle was saying, especially the part where he was saying, you know, does Maggie like kissing you on your face and stuff like that? And I was trying to, basically Merle is, you know, really the evil of evils.
Yeah, he has no remorse for anything.
Yeah, he's a really ruthless guy. And we're basically, and Glenn, rightly so, was afraid to take him back to the camp.
Yeah, he's acting very tough in this scene, you know, and we see that a lot and progressively later on as we see what 8 months in the wilderness has done to a man, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so Glenn is not the same Glenn that, you know, he left, well, Merle left before, you know.
Exactly.
Glenn's changed, he's become stronger.
And he has more, he can take more.
Mm-hmm.
He's become tough. He has a tough skin now.
And plus, you know, he's going to protect the group no matter what.
And I don't understand, and I'm still wondering why Merle is even trying to ask them where their camp is, because why would they tell him?
To save their lives.
But he should have known that they know that he's a terrible man, and why would they even want to, like, I don't know. Hey, I understand why they didn't give it up.
He has to try, and, you know, to get it out of them, that's that's his job. I mean, if you torture someone long enough, they'll break down, unless they don't care about their lives.
That's true, and that's kind of what it's going on. They don't really care about their lives.
Like, if he doesn't care... excuse me. A little dust in my throat there. If they don't care about their lives, then they're not, you know, you can't get anything out of them. But,
exactly.
But however, Glenn does care about Maggie.
Yeah, because if you attack Maggie, then...
I mean, he does care about, I mean, he can sacrifice himself, but I don't know if he's going to sacrifice Maggie. So we'll see how the torture goes on.
And then we go to a next scene where we resume where the last episode left off, where Rick was at the fence and saw Michonne. Michonne was standing with the walkers. And after a while, the walkers take notice to Michonne because I guess the smell of the walkers wears away to reveal your true scent, and they start to converge on her. And really, we get to see, basically, Rick gets to see what kind of person Michonne is, how she really handles herself. Because even though she's injured, she's still a formidable person, you know?
Mm-hmm. And she's fighting... She slices off the head of one walker.
Exactly.
Stabs another mm-hmm. one. And
passes out.
Yeah, so that's how tired she was. She was basically on the brink of exhaustion.
And it seemed like that, you know, Rick was just willing just to leave her there and not do anything because, you know...
Yeah, he was just staring through the fence doing nothing.
Yeah, he didn't... I think after everything that's happened, I don't think he wanted to, you know, take a chance with some other random stranger, this crazy woman looking woman, right?
Yeah, and because they lost a lot of people. T-Dog and Carol, as far as we know, she's dead.
And his wife.
His wife. So
yeah, he's still kind of questioning whether he should even let her come in. And then, you know, Carl makes a decision and, you know, fires off a couple rounds and kills a couple walkers.
And that wakes up Rick to start running and opening the gate and running out.
Yeah.
And start shooting walkers. I mean, Carla was the first one to say, hey, should we help her?
Yeah.
You know?
What I'm still wondering is how Michonne's injury did not get infected, because she was covered in walker guts.
Because it's a TV show and it's not reality.
Mm.
Remember that? yeah, exactly. I mean, really? It's been rolling around in the dirt and everything.
I know.
Didn't get infected. But it was a flesh wound. So it was on the surface. So it's a cut, but, you know.
And... yeah, so after she passes out, Rick takes her into the prison along with everybody else and, you know, separates her from her weapon. As soon as she wakes up after dumping water on her face, she tries to reach for a weapon. And Rick's like, no, 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 we're not going to hurt you unless you hurt us first. And I feel like, oh, it's just like the governor
mm-hmm.
taking the weapon away. So that probably doesn't sit well with her.
That brings back memories of the governor.
But what kind of maybe even changes her opinion a little bit is because we know she's very observant, a very observative person.
Observant.
A very observant person.
Hey, and you did it. You managed to say the word.
Oh my gosh, Dad. Thank you. I try really hard. And after like dealing with her for a few moments, Rick goes into the cell and sees that Carol is in fact alive.
Yay.
And is really happy.
Well,
and
we kind of knew that from the previous episode, yeah. But Rick didn't know that.
Yes. So
and Rick now knows.
Yeah, now he knows. And they had a little moment there. And Carol saw the baby and started like, oh my gosh. And then realized that Lori's gone. And Rick starts crying. And, you know, Carl starts crying. And everyone's just crying. And meanwhile, Michonne witnesses this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, what's going through her mind? Does this prove that they are different people and that she gets them?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So there's an emotional moment there that she witnesses. So that might be changes her opinion about the group and who they are. There was one scene where Carol sees the baby and then she's smiling.
Yeah. And then she starts crying when she realized that Lori was dead.
Yeah. So there's happiness and then turned to tears because she
looked at,
Rick and Rick's face was all gloomy. And so that kind of indicated, yeah, the baby's alive, but the mother's dead.
You gain one, lost another.
Oh, well. Yeah.
And, yeah, and so, then in the same mm-hmm. in the same time, you know, when Rick goes back to Michonne, he's very, you know, crass with her. He's very, you know, aggressive, saying, okay, where are they? And, like, grabs her wound because she reveals to him.
I didn't like that part.
Yeah.
I didn't like when Rick grabbed her wound. That's kind of basically throwing salt on the wound.
Exactly. It's saying, okay, we're
literally.
It's like, oh, we won't hurt you unless you hurt us. And then he goes and hurts her.
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, you better not do that with Michonne, because you know Michonne, she doesn't trust you, she doesn't trust you,
so,
and she'll do anything.
Yeah, so he's doing the same kind of things that the governor was doing to her. And, you know, I think Michonne is kind of not knowing what to do at this point. You know, should I tell these people everything, or is this Rick guy another governor?
But then he says, when Michonne says, oh, I don't have to tell you anything, go look for them yourself. Yeah. Then Rick realizes, okay, we're going to have to do this a different way, and tells, you know,
tells Daryl to put his
crossbow down.
Crossbow down.
And
calm down, Daryl. Put your knife down. Your ninja knife.
And Michonne, and then Rick says, then why? Well, you did come here for a reason, which basically says that's true.
Exactly. So you don't want to talk, then why the hell did you come here for?
Exactly.
Come on.
Why do you have this baby food? Like, what's up?
Speak up or forever keep your peace.
And Michonne basically says, well,
she breaks down. And she starts talking.
Yeah, she tells them what happened and what she saw. And basically, they make up a plan saying, you know, they're at Woodbury. I know we might be able to sneak in. Mm-hmm. And Rick doesn't even, you know, ask questions because, of course, they're going to go rescue Maggie and Glenn.
Well, they need Michonne because she knows where the Woodbury is.
Yeah.
And she knows details about the town, how to get in.
And what it looks like and where security, they keep all the stuff is.
Yeah, how much security they have.
And that's one of the reasons why the governor actually, you know, wanted to kill her after she left, because she knew.
She knows a lot of information.
Yeah, and that's not what they wanted.
Yeah, if you leave, you die, basically, according to the governor.
Exactly.
You stay there and you stay part of the town or you die. You can't leave.
You don't have a choice. Like, nope. It's like it may be a safe haven until you do want to leave, and then it's not a safe haven.
Well, you can't leave. That's the problem, because if you leave, you can meet someone else and tell them that where you came from.
Yeah.
And then people will come back to Woodbury. And that's what happened. So it backfired on the governor. Well, it backfired because he had Merle try to kill her.
Merle really doesn't care about anything but himself.
And Merle gave up. So, and then we go back to Merle and Glenn.
Yes. Now, this is the clip we wanted to play, but our computer was having some problems.
Well, it crashed.
Yeah.
But we went back and we decided to play the first clip. This is kind of the extension of that. We're not going to play this clip, but basically No, only one clip per episode.
Two clips.
Okay. No, sorry. So why don't you describe this scene?
So in this scene, basically we come back to where we were left off in the first opening scene. And this time Glenn is all beat up and looking not too good. He's like, he has like a black eye, he's all puffy, there's blood all over his face, and he's probably broke his nose too. And incredibly, I don't know why Merle is still so worked up on the fact that his group left him.
On the roof.
Like, yes, I know you cut off your hand, but it's been like 8 months, probably even more, and you've already got it out on Glenn.
Yeah.
And you're somewhere better now that you probably wouldn't have been before. You'd probably be dead with Rick because Rick would probably kill you.
Get over it.
So get over it, right? It's the apocalypse.
It is.
So basically Merle questions Glenn, like, where are they? And Glenn says, you know, Rick's going to be looking for me.
Yeah, Rick's coming. And Merle says, no, he's not going to do anything because I got you and I got Maggie and he's not going to risk you guys. He's not going to do anything because I got you guys.
And like,
use them as bargaining chips, basically.
Yeah. But the thing is that Merle has some respect for Glenn for not breaking down after all that beating, because when he met him, he really wasn't very, you know, strong person, but now he is. And so he kind of respects him for that. And Glenn goes on to say that, oh yeah, Rick's going to come with me. We're a big group.
We're a big group and you can't handle us.
We have Rick, Shane, Jim, Dale, T-Dog.
Andrea. Well, he didn't say T-Dog, but...
Oh, he said, yeah, well, he should have said T-Dog. Well, he didn't say T-Dog.
No, he said T-Dog because...
Oh, he doesn't
He already said T-Dog was dead.
And then finally
He said all the people that were dead.
Except for, you know, Rick. And as far as he was concerned, Andrea was still dead too.
Yeah.
And that's when Merle was like, oh, really?
I know for a fact
you don't
that... I know for a fact that Andrea is alive.
Because she's here right now.
Exactly. And he didn't really tell Glenn that, but he kind of... He implied said, oh, that. Really? And then Glenn kind of looked that.
Oh, no.
It's like...
Caught him in a lie.
I guess he knows I'm lying.
Mm-hmm.
Merle goes, oh, Rick's coming? I'll bake him a cake with pink frosting on it. I guess I'll like that.
Merle has a way with words.
Yeah, Merle is... You want to hate him. He's the perfect guy that you, like, he's the bad guy.
He has
guy
no
that,
morals at all. He doesn't even, like, he's not like the governor who, you know, at least kills everybody with kindness. He doesn't...
kills with kindness?
You know, he doesn't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we go to another scene back at the prison where
Hold on. Oh. One other thing that was important that Glenn said was that, you know, we're not like you guys stuck in this dungeon here. Well, he thinks they're in a dungeon
because
he doesn't see Nell Woodbury. But he says, you know, we've been on the road for exactly for 10 months. So we're weathered people.
We know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
I could do this all day.
We've got experience. We got fighting skills. You guys have nothing.
You're living in this little fantasy world.
You're a wimp. You've been wimpified.
You are a wimp.
You're girly men.
Girly men.
What Arnold Schwarzenegger used to tell people. Well, there was a skit on Saturday Night Live where people were pretending to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they said, "You guys are little girly men." So that's scary because, you know, that means that they're formidable people.
Yeah, and I really like that because you don't really see the group from other people's strangers' perspective, mm-hmm. but we kind of get to see that with Woodbury as they come to the group.
Yeah.
And we go to another scene back at the prison where Michonne is still being held captive, and while Herschel is fixing her wound, and the person on guard is Carl, and, you know, has his hand ready
mm-hmm.
on the trigger. And I'm thinking, and this came to my mind, like, okay, if I was Michonne and I saw this kid in the apocalypse in this prison who's ready to kill me, you know, what do I think? Does that make... I would reflect back on how different times are. You know what I mean? Like, a kid is wielding a gun.
Yeah.
And is
different, different times, and also would indicate to her how strong the group is. Because even a kid has a gun and he's fighting.
They trust him.
That's how much the experience has trickled down to the young folks.
Yeah.
To the youngins.
The youngins.
Whereas compared to Woodbury, where, you know, kids are riding bicycles.
And probably won't be able to stay outside later than 6.
Eating lollipops and, you know, having orange juice.
Carl doesn't even have a bicycle.
Exactly. Poor Carl. No bicycle for Carl. And they're eating, you know, ice cream and stuff.
Parties and playing like hand games, patty cake. Carl has no one to play patty cake with.
So big stark contrast, and I'm sure Michonne is noticing this.
Yes, and then we go to Rick and a couple of other people who volunteered to go in and basically go get Maggie and Glenn back. Oscar's with them, so he's
officially part of the group. Interesting. Oscar volunteers,
Axel volunteers.
So does Axel.
And then Beth volunteers.
Yeah, I would say, Beth, go back to your corner. Go play guitar or something.
Go play guitar. Go sing a song.
Sing a song. Well, actually, she can't play guitar in the show. But yeah, go sing a song. But does that Axel actually go?
I don't think so. No one likes Oscar. Axel, do they?
So at the end of the day, Oscar goes, Rick, Daryl.
And does Carl go? No, Carl doesn't go.
Just the three of them? Oh, and Daryl, yeah. Just three people? I thought there was more.
I think Beth is going.
Oh, Michonne is going.
Oh, yeah, Michonne's going.
Yeah, so it's four.
Doesn't Beth go?
No, she ends up not going.
Then what's the point of saying, oh, I'm going?
Well, she just to show that, you know, even she can volunteer.
So it's just metaphor kind of thing?
No. It's just that's how much they care about Maggie and Glenn.
That they would, like, risk their own life.
Yeah, even Beth, who doesn't really,
you know, have any training out there.
Yeah, volunteers. That's how much... Mm. That's how much of a team they are, how much of a group they are.
Yeah, and also, you know, Daryl quickly mentions to Carl that, oh, I'll take care of your dad, your old man, because they know he's still a little unstable.
Yeah. And then Rick has a one-to-one talk with Carl.
And what a funny time to have that talk, you know? Like, don't you think you'd have that talk, like, earlier. Sooner and then instead of when Rick might not be coming back, you know? And basically he talks to him about Lori and her death and how he shouldn't have to shoot her. Mm-hmm. But Carl keeps cutting him off, saying, you know, I had to do it. Someone had to do it. And then they come, and then Rick changes the subject a bit, saying, oh, so I heard that you're calling the baby Ass Kicker. What is the real name of this child? And Carl says, well, we can name them we can name her after my third grade school teacher, Judith. And they're like, yeah, Judith.
Miss Miller.
Which is Judith.
A lot of people have been wondering where the Judith comes from, and that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm. So the child has a name.
I had forgotten that little nugget of information, which is, I think it doesn't really matter what her name is. I think Rick said, yeah, sure. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, he doesn't really care.
Yeah, he's like, as long as...
He's giving that power to Carl.
Yeah, as long as that makes Carl happy, that's fine. You can call her that. Mm-hmm. And Rick's saying, oh, remember, if walkers come in... And Carl's like, yeah, yeah, I know.
I got this.
So everything like he's saying is cutting him off like, don't treat me like a kid, basically.
Yeah.
I know exactly the protocol. I've been trained well. This apocalypse has trained me
well.
Yeah,
and he says, so if I don't come back, he's like, you're coming back. You know, he's pretty confident.
Yeah.
And then we have a very interesting scene where back at Woodbury with Milton, this pretend wannabe scientist.
Yeah, let's walk through the whole scene instead of going back and forth. Let's walk through the whole Milton and the scientist thing.
Okay, sounds good.
The governor takes Andrea to Milton's little house of horrors lab.
Underground.
Mad scientist lab.
You know what reminds me? You know the movie The Princess Bride?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that part where they're trying to like revive the prince or the guy?
Yeah.
In the black mask. And they use this like pump thing to pump whatever... And whatever was in there, like air into his lungs, and they would put his face to his mouth and says, true love. I don't know why I remember that. That place reminds me of that. And they would electroshock him.
Wow. Okay. Now that you mention it, I remember it, but yeah, I didn't make the connection.
Did you know they had a 20-year anniversary?
Of?
He's fat now.
The Princess Bride?
Yeah, he's Who's fat now. The main character. The guy.
Oh, really?
Well, because he's old.
That sucks.
He was so cute.
Old age does that to you.
Yeah, Dad. You would know. Anyway.
I wouldn't know. I'm young as a fiddle. Okay, so fit as a fiddle, actually. That's not a saying. Can we go back to Milton?
Yes, continue. Sorry, a little trip down memory lane.
So why don't you describe it,
then? Yes, so... Okay. Okay. So we're at Milton's little lab thing, whatever, makeshift lab, and he's performing an experiment, and he needs Andrea's help. And basically, Andrea's there... to sedate their subject if need be.
Mm-hmm.
And his experiment basically is trying to see if after you're transformed, air quotes around that, because that's what he used, the term he used, if they still have any, you know, conscience, any unconscious like thoughts or any memory of their former life. So they take this man who is on the verge of death.
Coleman.
Yeah, Mr. Coleman, who suffers prostate cancer and who volunteered. And for a couple, basically Milton has given him a series of questions that he knows about, that he knows to be true, and surrounds him with like paintings and music.
A record playing.
Yeah, record playing. And some little bowl that when you like put a, like, I don't know what it is. What is that? I don't even know how to explain that.
It's a copper bowl, and he has a metal stirring thing that he moves around and it makes a noise.
Yeah.
It makes a ringing noise. That's one way of making noise. I guess they don't have electricity and stuff. Well, I guess they did have electricity because he was playing a record. So, but anyway.
Oh, a record doesn't need electricity, does it?
Yeah, it does. The one they were having did. Oh. It wasn't like a wind up one or anything.
Oh.
Well, you wouldn't know because you don't know what a record.
You know what? I still can educate myself.
You don't know what a record player is, by the way, right?
I know what a record player is. I've seen it enough times to know what it's like.
Well, but you haven't really experienced it.
I've never actually seen one in real life.
But you've never lived through that period of having records.
Obviously not. Yes, Dad, I am young, okay? If that's what you're trying to say.
So you actually put a needle on the spinning disc?
I know. I saw Toy Story.
Okay.
In Toy Story, the Andy's toy was like, you know, the cowboy was running on the record player.
Oh. That's how you learned about record players?
Probably. That's probably my first.
Your first experience.
Anyway.
Yeah. I guess they didn't. It was better than having a CD player, I guess, on the show. It's more visual to have a record spinning.
So he gave him a series of those tests periodically just so that he can remember it. And you know what I was thinking on his, like, right when he died, I was like, oh, poor old man. He's going to be like turning into a walker. I'm thinking, like, what's this man's past? Because when he asked him the questions, it's like, this is your wife, these are your kids. You know, and I'm like, oh, what is this guy's history? What did he do before the apocalypse? And I'm glad he dies somewhere where he's safe, you know, like he's the last days of his life. He's lived in a nice, safe place, not having to forage for food and stuff like that.
Mm.
You know, and I just wanted to know his life. I don't know why. I don't know. I wonder what Mr. Coleman was like.
And the kind of weird thing is that Milton actually believes that he's a real scientist.
I know.
Poor guy thinks he's actually doing real science, and he's...
Because a real scientist would really get into the action and really figure out, like, early on what is going on. Because he hasn't seen someone change beforehand.
This is the first time he's seen someone change.
Exactly. So what kind of scientist doesn't know that? And it's already, like, a year into the apocalypse?
And he's a little bit of a wimp. We see that. And that's why Andrea is there, because when the
governor knows that
anything goes wrong, Andrea can finish Mr. Coleman off. And so Mr. Coleman changes into a walker.
Yes, he reanimates. And as soon as he reanimates, Milton does his series of tests again. And basically, if he recognizes anything that he says, he raises his right hand. But obviously he didn't, because he's a walker. And at one time he grips the bed and Milton's like, see, that's a sign. And Andrea's like, he says,
we're restraining his memories. Like, really? You're restraining his memories? Really?
So he begins to unbind him after, you know, Andrea's protest. And as soon as he unbinds one of his arms, the walker lunges for Milton, and Andrea has to step in and stab him in the head. And, you know, Milton's just like stood still with fright, right?
Yeah, Milton didn't even flinch. He didn't even go back or anything. He was just in his same position he was when he
unstrapped him.
Yeah, and the walker would have totally ripped his face off if Andrea didn't do anything.
I know, that's why Andrea was there. And as soon as he was done, he's like, well, I'm going to go record my results while they're still fresh. And walks away. Still kind of visibly shaken, you know?
Yeah, well, they're still fresh, yes. I don't want to screw up my results here. Really? Okay, yeah, it was really stupid. And do you think Andrea actually believed him? Believed that there was some chance that would be true?
No, I don't think so.
Do you think she wanted to believe?
No, I don't even think so. Mm. I'm thinking...
I think she did.
I think that when the apocalypse first started, maybe she was holed out somewhere for a while. And, you know, just like, what's his name with the kid? And back in season one, the black guy that saved Rick.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she saw something like that. Like, you know how the black guy saw his wife and she kind of had a feeling? Yeah, Amy.
Yeah, Amy.
Oh, yeah, Amy. Yeah, she totally didn't have any, like, recollection. Even then, Andrea knew when Amy died.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that maybe the experiment that Milton did was actually giving Andrea some hope. And because we'll see later that, you know, when she goes back to the governor, And the governor asks her, you know,
how'd it go?
How'd it go? She was visibly shaken. Like, she was kind of sad and almost crying.
Oh.
Because she said, Mr. Coleman died. And that's it. And then he said, he asked Andrea, did Milton get what he wanted?
And she was like, sadly, no.
No, he didn't. So I'm just wondering if deep down, Andrea, there was a little bit of hope there. Like, maybe Milton does have
possibly. That could be it.
Yeah. One other interesting fact about that scene that came out for Milton, a little bit of background on Milton, is that because Andrea asked him, you know, you haven't seen transformation before?
Yeah.
Didn't anybody you know?
Oh, yeah. He said when she asked him, didn't you have any family members that turned? And he said, oh, well, I'm an only child and my parents died when I was young. And, you know, I didn't really have anybody.
Yeah.
And she's like, how did you get here then? Oh, I telecommute to work. And yeah.
So he never really socialized with anyone.
Yeah.
He was working from home. He was a loner. And you could tell that he didn't socialize with people because the way he acts around people.
Socially awkward.
Awkward. And that's kind of indicates how come Milton is so...
Yeah, he's not very comfortable around people.
Right.
He likes his dead people.
He likes experimenting on dead people.
Yeah. And then...
So there's a scene with Glenn. So we go back to Glenn and Maggie, who are being interrogated.
Yes. Merle goes in back with Glenn, and this time he has a friend with him. He brought a walker, and basically that's his last resort for, you know, trying to get information out of Glenn, and says, okay, well, you can tell us where your little hideout is. And Glenn refused, so he let the walker go and basically left Glenn by himself in a room strapped to a chair by duct tape, no less, to fight off this walker. Hopefully Merle's thinking that he'll die. And then we see this is like the best scene for Glenn. I kind of think of this scene as his becoming a man kind of scene, because, you know, he's trying to save himself from the walker, and he's trying to break the chair at the same time because he's still restrained and he's struggling, and then he breaks the chair finally, and at the last possible second uses one of the legs of the chair to stab the walker in the head, which was amazing.
Yeah, and one thing I like about the way they directed the scene was in no moment did you think that they're giving Glenn a chance.
Exactly.
Like, they didn't show the walker like stumbling and then slowly moving and Glenn having tons of time
to like go in and like, oh, yeah, look at his weapon and then like stab him, you know. Like,
they didn't slow it down. They basically made it look really realistic, like it could actually happen that way.
Yeah.
And did you notice that in an older episode, Milton had duct tape on his hand and that protected him?
And he kind of used that same kind of thing here. When the walker was too close to him to defend himself, he just put up his arm with the duct tape, and that kind of blocked the walker's bite.
Yeah, so that was convenient that they duct taped his arm to the chair.
Because you know, a human's jaw, you know, crush rate, like biting rate, isn't very powerful.
Yeah, but apparently a walker's... Yeah, that's true. So they can't bite through duct tape.
Yeah.
And then
his last scene after he killed the walker, he starts screaming.
Like, yeah!
I am a man!
Well, it just proves that he's stronger than he looks.
Yeah.
And then in the other room... Meanwhile,
the governor takes care of Maggie, because after Merle finds out that, oh, looks like the walker plan didn't work, he tells the governor and says, these people are pretty tough, and I'm gonna go ask what Maggie knows. And then the governor's like, you know, no, let me take over here. Let me see if I can do it. And when I first saw this episode, I'm like, good, thank God. Maybe he wouldn't be so bad as Merle, you know?
Yeah.
But I think he was kind of worse.
Yeah, because the governor's more psychological than physical.
Yes, yeah.
The governor is like a psychological torture rather than physical torture. Merle is like, he just punches the crap out of him.
Yeah, traditional.
And that's probably what he would have done to Maggie. But the governor goes in and he's, again, putting on his show.
Of being like good cop, bad cop, but except he's like asking her, oh, can I sit down with you? Thank you.
Like, he's asking permission to sit down.
Like she has a choice.
Yeah, he's kind of showing that, you know, I respect you, but I really don't.
Yeah, so basically he makes this case saying, okay, tell us what you know and we'll let you go free and we'll even drive you to the camp. And I'm thinking, okay, this is not going to work. He's trying to do what he did to the army guy, you know, making promises.
Same with Andrea and Michonne.
Yeah, making promises that we know that he can't keep.
No, he won't keep.
Yeah. So, but she doesn't fall for it, so he takes it to another step.
And what step is that?
You can explain this. I don't like this scene. It makes me queasy.
Yeah, because he asks her to take off her shirt, and it says, if you don't take off your shirt, I'll bring Glenn's hand in here.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, I'm Mr. Nice Guy, but I can chop off Glenn's hand.
If need be.
And he takes off her shirt, and he pushes her down on the table and pretends like he's going to rape her or something.
Yeah, to scare her. And at that moment, you think that, oh, she's going to say something. But surprisingly, she says, do whatever you have to do, but I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. And I think when I first saw this scene and we were watching it together there, I was very awkward.
Yes, it was very awkward.
But like the very first time, because now I know, the second time I know what actually happened.
Yeah.
But the first time I saw it, I'm thinking, oh.
Am I going to have to fast forward this?
Is this why I turn off the TV now? Because you guys can't watch this stuff. So I really thought the governor was going to rape her. And I figured that would be really raw and real.
Yeah.
And it would be totally acceptable in this world and in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Because bad things happen, right?
Yeah.
And the governor is really evil.
If people can kill random people, strangers that you normally wouldn't do, then yeah.
Yeah, a rape makes total sense.
It probably happens a lot more than you think.
Yeah, but they decide to go... So the series in general is it's easier to kill and show guts and violence than it is to show sex.
Mm-hmm.
That's in general how TV
That's
is.
That's just society, yeah.
That's just the general TV principle. Is it's okay to show guns and killing and sex. I mean, sorry, zombies. and all that stuff and guts, but you can't show sex. Like, that's kind of taboo. So I guess they didn't cross that line and they didn't do the rape scene.
I mean, they couldn't. It's television. Children watch that. They can't really control it.
Exactly.
Unlike with a movie, you can set restrictions.
Then the rating would be not like 14 and up. It would be like 18 and up.
Yeah, it would be like one of those HBO shows like True Blood or something.
Yeah, exactly. And True Blood shows a lot of that. So that's why you can't watch it. you see, even I have a double standard. There you go. And so, but I'm glad they didn't show it because, you know, then we could actually continue watching the show. And it kind of shows something about the governor, right?
Yeah, he'll because do anything.
He's evil, but he didn't cross the line. But you know what? He didn't have to. Just the idea of it.
Scared her enough.
That he has the power to do that. And Glenn also.
And I think it was part of his plan to bring Maggie in with Glenn. As like a final process to the interrogation, basically showing that you know, kind of like
Maggie was naked from the waist up, and she was covering herself with her hands. But the way she looked, it looked like she got raped.
Yeah, basically,
and that's what Glenn thought.
And yeah, that's basically what all he had to do because he was pissed off. And when he realized that wasn't working, he pulled out his gun and said, "Okay, we're gonna do this the hard way. And you tell us where the camp is." And then he points the gun to Glenn. And this is when, as soon as he does that, that's when Maggie spilled the beans.
Yeah.
Because once it comes, you can do it to yourself. They can interrogate you all you want. But once you hurt somebody that you love, then that card's on the table.
Yeah. And right after that, you know, those questions started flying like, okay, how many people and this and that?
10 people.
Uh-huh. And then
prison.
You notice that the governor and Merle right away start talking to each other, and the governor says,
"The prison? I thought it was overtaken."
Yeah,
you know, and this is a very important part. I really like this. This is the thing I was talking about. You know, the perspective, because to us, we think, "Oh yeah, anybody can take over the prison as long as they're united and they're, you know, they want to do it." But now that you think about it, even people like the governor couldn't do it, even with all those people that he had, that he couldn't do it, and so he's kind of like, if just 10 people can take over an overrun prison, then these people might be really tough.
Mm-hmm.
We should be scared of them.
Yeah.
Basically, that, oh, they're probably on their way in here now and we need to prepare ourselves.
Yeah. And, you know, and one thing that is interesting is that the governor thinks that Merle lied to him.
Really? Where?
At some point, because one line that the governor says to Merle, this group has done something that you told me couldn't be done. Right? And basically what that means is...
You told me that they're just like wussies and they aren't really something I need to worry about.
Yeah. And also they're living in the red zone or whatever it's called.
Right next to them.
Yeah. So people are out there surviving and doing stuff. And it seems like the governor's been getting information from Merle.
Yeah, a lot of the time.
As to what's going on out there. Because yeah. Merle's always out there and doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The governor's not always out there. He's back at Woodbury. So at some point, Merle told the governor, yeah, they're as good as dead. You know, they're out there with the walkers. Just like...
Yeah.
Just like he told one of the guys that, you know, Michonne is in the red zone. She's as good as dead or whatever.
And maybe he starts thinking that maybe he knew that the red zone was where they were the whole time.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think he kind of was questioning Merle's loyalty.
Yeah, because then he asked, you know, your brother's over there with that group. And, you know, blood is blood. I'm wondering where your loyalty lies.
And Merle hesitated a little bit and he said, it's here with you, right? So we will see what happens with that.
Yeah.
And we have a little side adventure with Rick's group. So yes. Rick's group is headed to Woodbury, but on the way there, they run into some problems.
Oh, this is a very important scene, I think, because on they parked on the on the side of the road because they didn't want to be too close, obviously, and they would go take a shortcut through the woods. And on their way there, Rick, you know, and Rick thanks Daryl for working things out with I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, working things out because when he was going in crazy.
Oh, yeah. When he was going crazy, working things out and keeping the group together, basically. And I can't believe I forgot that. And then just as they're talking, and you notice that Michonne, I think, picked up on that.
Mm-hmm. She was listening.
She was listening. So there's another ding point there. Like, oh, they take care for each other. They trust each other. Okay. And then walkers come out of the bushes out of nowhere and start to attack them. And so but Rick is not too worried because he says, okay, everybody get into formation. And that's when they start doing their little classic move where they stab, bring back in, and they're like in a 360, you know, really in a tight formation like their practice. And Michonne watches the group and watches how united they are, you know, and how, you know, organized they are and sees that real bond and that trust. And you can see it on her face that she's impressed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she's now understanding how this group survived
mm-hmm.
all this time because they had this cooperation going on.
Because when Michonne was leaving the prison, she asked Beth, you guys took this, the 10 of you took this prison by yourselves? Like, she didn't believe it.
Yep.
But then Beth said, yeah, we lost some people.
Yeah, there was more of us.
And that's when Michonne really like, oh, okay. And yeah, so they make it, they somehow find this little hut,
cabin,
which belonged to a hermit. Because who else has a cabin in the middle of the woods?
This is a funny scene because...
Yeah.
There's always these...
It's not meant to be funny, but it's funny.
It's funny because they go into the cabin and they find Lassie dead. Well, according to Daryl.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess Lassie came home and
died. It's a dead dog lying there. It looks pretty like dead for days.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so they're being followed by walkers and they're banging on the door. So they're trying to be quiet. And then they find this hermit sleeping... Who apparently
was he sleeping or was he passed out or I don't know what was going on. How could someone sleep with all that noise and people coming into the?
Yeah, and on the top of that, I have this dead dog stench in your whole, you know, your whole cabin. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's weird. How can you be locked in there for like 8 months? Like, what food and stuff? I mean, it seems like a unbelievable scene. Like, it's not possible.
Yeah, because this hermit doesn't know what's going on. He's like, "Why are you in my house? I'm calling the cops." He says, "I am a cop. Show me your badge." You know, like. He has no really recollection of what's going on, has no really idea what state the whole world is in right now.
And Rick is trying to calm him down, well, mainly because he has a gun pointed at him, but also because Rick is still Rick, and Michonne's like, you gotta shut this guy up.
Yeah, because it was being too loud, and it's getting the, you know, walkers all rowdy, and basically
Rick knocks the gun out of his hand.
Yeah, Rick tries to get the gun, but... You know, that doesn't work. And he makes a run for it for the front door. And then that's when Michonne takes it upon herself to, like, you know, take him out and stab him with her katana.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, whoa. Because that kind of...
Well, Rick didn't say anything, but he just looked at it like, I guess the decision has been made.
Yeah, kind of like, thanks, you know? And they use the hermit body as a distracting, as a distraction, like any other person would, any other sensible person would, to drive away walkers. Use a dead hermit. Throw it at the walkers. You know what I mean? It's perfect. And Oscar's a little bit like, are you kidding me? Rick's like, we gotta do what we gotta do.
And the back door was open and there was no walkers there because they were all at the front eating the hermit.
So yeah, he tossed the hermit out there and we have a really nice scene where the walkers are eating the hermit and it looks really real.
It looks gross. A lot of blood, intestines and stuff.
Yeah, and fingers.
And so that's the kind of end of the episode because we're at the climax of Rick and the group coming up to Woodbury.
Yeah, because the last scene is where they're, you know, right behind a car at night in front of one of the gates.
And they cut off the episode there.
You know, I hate that.
Leave us on the cliffhanger. You wanted to watch the other episode too.
Yes, I was like, let's combine the episodes. Come on, we got to know what happens.
I know, but we didn't. We got to follow our protocol, man.
Leave comments if you want to do two at a time. Actually, no. I don't know if I want to do that all the time.
We have a little bit of trivia.
Yep. Trivia. Okay, were we waiting for you?
I was waiting for the trivia. Okay, I got it. That one scene that we just talked about where the walkers were eating the hermit.
Ooh, tell me more. tell me more.
The intestines were made out of silicone casing stuffed with barbecue.
Really?
Yes. And the walker extras who did not eat meat were given vegetarian stuffing.
What? Wait, so that was actual meat they were using?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm confused.
So they
actually cook the meat and then they just put them in this like body bag and then let them eat it?
I don't think they actually ate it, but you know, it went in their mouths and stuff because they have to pretend they're eating, right?
Yeah.
So because it was meat, they had to use meat just to make it look like I don't know what. And so they were giving vegetarian stuffing for the vegetarians, apparently. That was taken from an interview on The Talking Dead, which happens after The Walking Dead show. And we also, in the making of that scene with Michonne and the walker,
mm-hmm.
There's a scene where Michonne shows up to the prison and she's on her own and she passes out, right?
Yeah.
But before she passes out, she takes out a walker. She decapitates a walker.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene was done with a dummy head.
Yep.
It was a walker with a dummy head. And the head was mounted on kind of a bust with a magnetic mount. So then when Michonne swipes at the dummy, the head actually chops off and everything. So, and then when the head pops off, they squirt fake blood out and everything.
Don't they use like an extinguisher? The extinguisher?
They actually use a fire extinguisher with blood, filled with blood, to shoot out the blood from the zombie. So that was kind of the behind the scenes as to how they did that scene a little bit, which was kind of fun. I would love to be there and just to watch.
That's what I'm telling you, man. I wish I was on set.
I don't want to be a zombie or anything. I just want to be there and just watch him do all the magic. That's kind of cool. Just watch this awesome group of people making this thing look so realistic.
Yeah. See the magic. And they also said it was like a collaboration that a lot of people went into it, you know, getting that scene in particular together too.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about the title of this episode.
Oh yeah, because every episode we always talk about where the meaning of the title came from.
When the dead come knocking. So what do you think when the dead come knocking
means? My theory is that the dead come knocking, I think that refers to when Rick's group comes to Woodbury because, you know, when they come knocking on their door and why they call them dead is because, you know, Merle thinks, oh yeah, they came from the red zone and, you know, whoever goes in there is a dead man.
Yeah, and also Glenn mentions all the dead people's names that part of their group.
Yeah, that are apparently gonna come and get them.
Yeah, so the dead come knocking. And I agree with you. I think that's what it really means. Some people say that it's the zombies knocking at the door of the hermit's cabin.
Oh, that could be it.
That's another possibility. Michonne's arrival at the prison. That could be another reason.
Yeah. There's a lot of knocking.
So the dead come knocking is basically, you know, this group that everybody thought was dead and all that coming knocking on Woodbury's door.
And that pretty much concludes this episode. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. If you like what you hear, please share this podcast with your friends. We appreciate any feedback that you have. You can send us email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And this is Michael.
Stay alive.